microphone right here. We have an interesting lady. Interesting lady here today. And I pulled this picture because I kind of like the sassy pose that she was giving. And she doesn't know that God's going to sass right back at her with this lesson. So, Potiphar's wife, uncontrolled lust in Genesis 39. When I was a teenager, I used to read Glamour magazine. I looked through each issue, and there was always a page called the Glamour Do's and Don'ts. How many of you remember this? Yes. The first picture would always be an elegantly dressed lady. From head to toe, everything was matching. And then the next three pictures were always women on the street who were doing a don't. They would have their pants too tight. They would have a handbag that didn't match their shoes.
Oh, heavens.
In my day, was a faux pas. Corset plush stripes with plaits. And it was obvious what to do and what not to do. I feel that in this lesson, we will see the sharp contrast of the don'ts of Potiphar's wife against the do's of Joseph's life in a close relationship with God. The choices Potiphar's wife made is not as simple as a fashion crime. Her crime is against God, Joseph, her husband, and herself. 1 Peter 5:8 reminds us that be alert and of sober minds. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. But this time, she's not a lion. She's a cougar. She is the older married lady coming after the good-looking servant, and she is determined to make Joseph her prey. Potiphar's wife is first introduced to us in Genesis 39, just after Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers. God's plan takes Joseph from the land of Canaan to Potiphar's home in Egypt, where he served as a slave. Potiphar is the captain of the guard to Pharaoh and considered to be the elite in Egypt. In ancient Egypt, there were three classes of people: the Pharaoh, which was equivalent to the king, the wealthy, and then the poor. There is no middle class. In my study Bible, it said that most of the wealthy lived in multi-level homes. The servants were all on the first floor, and the family lived on the second and third floors. Potiphar was in this class. Let's read God's word beginning in verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. From the time he was put in charge of the household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Wouldn't that be nice to be in that situation? We see five times in this passage that the Lord is with Joseph and extends out to everything Joseph is responsible for. This repetitional phrase is a reminder that even in Joseph's lowest trials, God is with him, and he is also with us. He narrowly escapes death in Genesis 37, and he's sold into slavery by his brothers. His brothers use his coat of many colors as a way of falsifying his death to his father, Jacob. Joseph should be bitter, but the presence and promises of the Lord sustained him. He was given his dreams from God when he was a boy, that someday his family would be bowing down before him. He was also given the stories of God's promises to Abraham, his great-grandfather in Genesis. And those promises are, I will make you a great nation, I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will curse those who curse you, and all people will be blessed through you. Does that sound familiar to those verses that we just read about Joseph's blessing in Potiphar's house? The favor must have been felt by Joseph and given him assurance every day. This is our first principle. For it is only when we recognize whose we are that we can confidently go through the shadow of death and know that his plan will prevail. Joseph's blessings from God could be seen by others. Potiphar, an Egyptian, recognizes the power of the one true God that is with Joseph. And soon Joseph the slave is invited across the threshold in Potiphar's house and over all that he owns. Okay, here we are in verse 7. It's the pivotal verse, and it introduces our vixen, the lady we're studying today. It begins with the statement, Joseph is well-built and handsome. Comma, it pauses, and then it concludes with, after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. Wow, this hits us like a tidal wave. There is no love in this invitation. It is just a flat order. There's no tenderness, subtlety. She wants to sleep with him. Joseph is now all grown up. He is no longer the little brother parading around in his coat of many colors. He's no longer the dreamer boy, as his brothers had referred to him as. He is the dream boat. He was taken into captivity at the age of 17, and he is a slave in Potiphar's house for 11 years. We do not know exactly how many years into the slavery before Potiphar's wife noticed him, but for Joseph's sake, I'm hoping that it was at the later end of the 11 years and not at the earlier end. It was probably as Joseph assumed responsibility in the household, he probably interacted more with Potiphar and his wife, and that became more familiar with Potiphar's wife. He was more mature because of the hard work that he had and probably had a physique that was strong and muscular. The Bible gives vivid descriptions in many cases, but doesn't use the term beauty very often. It is used 11 times in the Bible altogether, 8 for women and 3 for men, Joseph, David, and Absalom. Where did Joseph's good looks come from? The phrase used to describe Joseph's looks is also used of his mother, Rachel. It says in Genesis 29:17 that Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Many commentaries believe that the author gives us this description of Joseph's looks as a reason why Potiphar's wife would be giving him attention. But looks are not an excuse for sin. This is our second principle. Temptation takes root through the eyes. Matthew 6:22-24 says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" Okay, this is so true, and this is our warning. How many times are we perfectly content with our lives, and then we go to the mall, window shop, and all of a sudden feel like our clothes aren't good anymore?
Yeah.
Or we go and watch a show on HGTV. We see a beautiful house that's been redecorated, and we no longer want our house anymore. We want to move. We want the new furniture and the decorator that comes with it. This passage documents how temptation and desire enters through the eyes. I went ahead of myself. Let's see. Temptation and desire enters through the eyes and then grips the heart. Potiphar's wife did not look beyond Joseph's outward appearance to notice who he was on the inside. She didn't notice that the Lord was with him like her husband did. She just noticed his good looks and the lust that ignited in her heart. She orders him to sleep with her. And even though the law of the time stated that the penalty for adultery was death, she risked it. What surprises me in this passage is that the author doesn't even give Potiphar's wife her given name. He uses the phrase, master's wife, Mrs. Potiphar. I don't believe that that is an accidental omission. I believe that the author is making a point that she is a wife. She took the oath of marriage, and her devotion should be to her husband. In God's perfect plan, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. This term, one flesh, points to the profound solidarity of the marriage relationship, both spiritually and physically. In this passage, her name, master's wife, represents that her devotion should only be to Potiphar and not to Joseph. So how did this lady of prominence go quickly from the top of the Egyptian social scene to committing sexual harassment and falsely accusing an innocent man? After all, she is married to one of Pharaoh's attendants. In Egyptian social circles, she was probably known as the woman who had it all. She had the silk dresses, the hair, the makeup, the gold jewelry. Why would she risk it with a tryst with a slave, especially when the punishment was death? I did a quick search on the internet on adultery. According to the latest statistics, one partner in every four married couples have had an affair of some kind. That's shocking. With these high numbers, most everyone has been either the victim of an affair firsthand or has known someone that has gone through that and experienced the pain. And it is truly painful. The marriage bond, which is meant to be one flesh, is ripped apart, and it takes a piece of the person with them. Adultery destroys marriages, breaks up families, and creates wounds that sometimes take generations to heal. Proverbs 5, 3 through 6 gives us a very vivid warning. For the lips of an adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, and her steps straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her path wanders aimlessly, but she does not know it. Those are impactful words. With the visual image of an adulterous woman, I ask myself, why do women cheat when the cost can be so great? I once again went to the internet and did a search, and the top four reasons are: one, she feels underappreciated, neglected, or ignored. She craves intimacy. She is bored and/or lonely. She never feels fully loved. All of these apply to Mrs. Potiphar. You see, she had spent years climbing the social ladder of success, only to find out that the ladder does not have a foundation that can sustain her desires. Each rung on the ladder probably gave her momentary satisfaction, a higher view, but soon it wasn't enough. She had an appetite for the world, and she wanted more. Have you ever been to a great dinner and you eat and eat until your stomach can't take anymore, and you tell yourself it is just for tonight, tomorrow I will diet and eat healthy? I can't imagine ever being hungry again. And the next day you wake up, you're still a little full, so you bypass breakfast. You feel like you're doing well. Lunch comes and your rumbles start. So you eat healthy, you grab a banana, an apple, something good for you. By mid-afternoon, the rumbles start getting louder. You want more. Dinner comes, the diet is blown. You are famished again, and the vicious eating cycle begins all over again. Without God and the fullness he brings, Potiphar's wife is consumed with her own self. She is in a feeding frenzy to fulfill her wants and desires. We need to ask ourselves, what foundation is our ladder leaning on, us or God? Because only God can truly satisfy this craving in our heart. Only he, through his son, Jesus Christ, fills us up with his living water, and we will never thirst again. Here's principle three. Here's principle three. When you are consumed with feeding yourself with your desires, you don't allow God to feed you with his desires. Joseph tries to warn Mrs. Potiphar, but it falls on deaf ears. Joseph says, "With me in charge, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her and even be with her. Can you imagine the torment Joseph had to endure, being pursued by Mrs. Potiphar day after day? Proverbs 19:21 says, "Many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails." And Mrs. Potiphar did not know that Joseph had the Lord behind her and his strength. And God uses this trial to bring triumph to his holy name. Potiphar's wife conjures up a plan to dismiss all the servants and be alone with Joseph. There was no way out for him but to flee, and his cloak was left in her hands. She was so consumed with her lust that she literally ripped his clothes off. It was thought that he was running out of the house and into the grounds completely naked. She waits for Potiphar to come home and weaves this tale about how the Hebrew Potiphar brought into this house tried to rape her. Does this sound familiar? Remember Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden? When confronted by God, Adam tried to shift the blame by saying, "The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree and I ate it." And when the eyes turned to Eve, her explanation was, "The serpent made me do it." Human nature causes us to shift the blame, to try to cover up our own sin. But is the sin really covered up? We know God sees the truth. And it is thought that Potiphar may have also seen through her story. Joseph ended up in prison, but we read that this was a relatively light punishment for rape. The usual punishment is death. Many commentaries feel that Potiphar actually doubted her words as well, but wanted to save face and side with his wife instead of his trusted servant of 11 years. Just like Mrs. Potiphar, Potiphar also had a lot to lose. Without Joseph, his house was not blessed by God. Potiphar is not mentioned again in the Bible, even when Joseph rises to power and is second in command of all of Egypt. I have to think that if Potiphar remained captain of the guard, their paths would have crossed. We don't know if his household crumbled because of the sin, but it is quite possible. Unchecked lust and sexual temptation crumbles marriages and destroys families. Okay, quite a story. So what can we learn from this woman? How can we apply it to our lives today? We don't want to be the verses in God's book of life of what not to do like Mrs. Potiphar. We want to use our time wisely and pursue God with our whole heart. So let's compare the don'ts of Mrs. Potiphar versus the do's of Joseph. Okay, Mrs. Potiphar, she's an Egyptian. Joseph is an Israelite. He is a foreigner in the land, just like we as Christians are a foreigner in the world. 1 Peter 2:11 says, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires, which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits." That applies perfectly to Joseph. Potiphar's wife, she has the world. Joseph has God. Potiphar's wife has worldly perspective. She's consumed with the world and herself. Joseph has a heavenly perspective. He knows God's promises and demonstrates the fruits of the Spirit, especially self-control. Mrs. Potiphar is a slave to her lusts. Joseph is a slave in the household, but his true master is God. Mrs. Potiphar is a liar. Joseph is a truth teller. He states the truth and through it brings glory to God. Mrs. Potiphar relies on her own plan and uses it daily to achieve her demise. Joseph relies on God's plan and uses it daily to achieve God's goals. And lastly, Mrs. Potiphar appears to have it all and falls hard. Joseph appears to have nothing and rises to second in command. We learned in our lesson that Mrs. Potiphar did not use her time wisely. She chose the world instead of God's promises. What if Mrs. Potiphar had noticed the Lord was with Joseph and asked him into her heart and chose him as Lord of her life? What would her household have looked like? What if she turned her fantasies around and fantasized about her own husband, showered him with attention when he came home, batted her eyes at him, told him that he was the object of her desire? What would her marriage have looked like? What if her words were used to build up her household daily, to encourage them? She needed to turn her fantasies off herself and turn them on to God. And this is a wise warning to all of us. She could have been the do role model, like so many of the women that we are studying, but instead, she is the don't. Encourage one another and look around you. Think about what God has for you. His plan is better. Our homework in the study guide gave us some wise passages to consider as we fill up our daily calendar. If we start out our day with God, his manna will feed us all day long. He will guide your choices and make your path straight, not wander aimlessly like the adulterous woman in the passage we heard. He wants to fill up your day with his joy and his security and his righteousness. So at the end of the day, you can say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." While I must confess that I struggled with this lesson because I could not identify with Mrs. Potiphar and her sexual lust, I started thinking about the worthless lust that I cling to in other areas of my life. What lusts do we cling to? Just like Mrs. Potiphar, these lusts can grip me too. My passion for these desires overtakes my passion for God. These desires start feeding on my pride, and I start listening to Satan's voice in the quiet moments telling me I'm underappreciated, bored, lonely. I feel unworthy, instead of God's voice telling me, "I'm worthy, I am with you. I have better plans for you than you could ever know." These lusts manifest in so many different ways. We have already identified sexual sin, but what about those other lusts that control us? What about beauty? Our society makes us feel like we're not enough by advertising products to give us a younger appearance, doctors to give us a better body. Do we believe it? How about the lust of covetousness? Would a bigger, better car, a nicer house, make me feel worthy? Or do I humbly submit to the Lord for his will for my life? Another biggie, how about doubt? Do I start doubting that this bump in the road that I'm experiencing is too big for God? That his love isn't enough? Another one, security. Will I have enough money for the future? Is my security in money or him? Addictions. Do I let my cravings take over what I know is healthy for my life? Another struggle, perfectionism. Do I desire the earth's version of perfection over his heavenly perfection? Popularity. Am I trying to be my child's best friend or their parent? Am I troubled by my friend's 84 likes on Facebook over my 20 likes? The list can go on, but before we know it, our fist is tightly trying to hold on to each one of them. Corrie Ten Boom, the Holocaust survivor who lost her entire family in Auschwitz, said the wise words, "Hold everything in your hands lightly, otherwise it hurts when God pries your fingers open." How do we release this grip on the world? By giving it to God. I read a simple book, I read a simple trick this summer in this book, Love Does. The author, Bob Goff, is an attorney who tells his clients that when they give a deposition, to sit back in the chair and turn your palms up. When their palms are up, they have an easier time being calm, honest, and accurate. It is hard to be defensive and controlling when our palms are faced up. Palms up, it means that you have nothing to hide and nothing to lose. You are vulnerable and open to the Lord, surrendering all your desires to him. And we have the perfect example in Jesus Christ. When he was crucified, he was on the cross with his hands open, giving his life in exchange for ours, taking our sins away. These lusts don't have to take a stronghold on your life. Turn them over to God and surrender to him with your palms up. So as we close today, I want us to take a moment and close our eyes right now. Think about these lusts that take a stronghold on our life. Think about the lust of perfectionism, addiction, sexual lust. The list goes on and on. Visualize the lust that you struggle with right now. The things that overwhelm us. The things that we try to control that separates us from the Lord. Whether big or small, they grip us and they penetrate our hearts. Now turn your wrist over and open up your hands. Palms up. Surrender them to the Lord and the cleansing blood of his Son, Jesus Christ. Rest in the comfort of his presence. Be confident that he is the good shepherd, that he is holding you right now in his hands, watching over his. Release your agenda and trust in his agenda, his plan, his strength, and his power. Lord, we prayerfully surrender to you right now. We ask that you take these desires that we struggle with, that somehow enter through our eyes and penetrates our heart. Replace them with a heart your Son, Jesus Christ, for the love that you have for us. We give you our weaknesses and ask for your strength. Where I am troubled, you are peace. You knew us before time began and have a future for us better than we can even imagine. Lift me up and carry me through this. Give me rest.